exciting primary election night brings wins, losses, and some stunning upsets. We'll have a complete breakdown. An effort is underway to recognize the national significance of the Arkansas Delta, and what does falling enrollment mean for Arkansas public schools? Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the Natural State. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Democrats and incumbent Republicans fared well in Tuesday's elections across Arkansas, with some surprise shakeups in state legislative and local races. Joining us to talk all about it is Little Rock Public Radio's politics and government reporter, Josie Lenora. Hey, Josie.
Hi, Daniel.
So it was an interesting night, to say the least, but what were some of the less surprising results on Tuesday?
Well, several statewide and federal races went pretty much the way we expected them to. Incumbent U.S. Senator Tom Cotton easily won his primary over two GOP challengers. Those were Jeb Little and Micah Ashby. So he's going to face Democratic challenger Hallie Schaffner in the November general election. Schaffner beat out her primary challenger, and that was Louisville Mayor Ethan Dunbar. She secured more than 80% support. Meanwhile, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to face Democratic State Senator Fred Love. Sanders was unopposed in this election. Love was primaried by SUFA, Cypress Sif Mays. She had previously run unsuccessfully for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. We also didn't see any surprises in the race to represent Central Arkansas in the U.S. House of Representatives. Incumbent French Hill easily beat his challenger, and his name was Chase McDowell. And he'll go on to face the former Democratic gubernatorial nominee, which was Chris Jones, and they'll face off in November. So Jones won the Democratic primary in a landslide against his challenger, Zach Huffman.
Any other results to highlight in statewide or federal races?
Yes. So one of the evening's closest races was the Republican primary for Secretary of State. And the vote was split pretty evenly between the three candidates: State Senator Kim Hammer, Kathy Hardin Harrison, and then Brian Norris. Each of them received just over 30% of the vote. Ultimately, though, Norris and Hammer were the top two candidates, and they'll face off against each other in the runoff. The winner then will go up against Democrat Kelly Grapp, and she was unopposed in the primary. Interestingly enough, the incumbent Secretary of State Cole Jester was not in that race. He was appointed by Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, so he can't run for the position. It's pretty likely he's going to stay in state government, though, because he easily won the primary to become the state land commissioner. His opponent in that race was Christian Olson, who only got about a third of the vote. Jester will face Libertarian Christopher Olson in November.
What were some of the biggest surprises of the night to you?
I think one of the most interesting trends we saw highlighted some of the big divides going on right now in the Republican Party. Republican state lawmakers appeared to have fended off primary challengers backed by Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders for the most part Tuesday night. State Senator Ron Caldwell won the District 10 primary. He edged out a challenger named Trey Bodert Bohannon. He had over 70% of the vote. Senator Brian King, meanwhile, also came out on top in the District 28 race ahead of challenger Bobby Ballinger. We also saw a pretty stunning upset when Senator Blank Johnson, who is a big ally to the governor and the current Senate majority leader, he lost his primary in District 21 to State Representative Jeremy Wooldridge. And it's important to note the context behind this, because Caldwell and King, and especially King, are some of the most vocal opponents in the legislature to the governor's plan for a new state prison in the West Arkansas city of Charleston. Sanders had likely been hoping to unseat them with primary challengers more aligned with her goals, but ultimately this wasn't successful for her. And in the state Senate district, where that prison would be located, voters decided that Republican Brad Simon will serve out the remainder of late Senator Gary Stubblefield's term in office. Simon beat independent candidate Adam Watson and will serve in the upcoming fiscal legislative session. And we're expecting that funding for the new prison to be a contentious topic in the upcoming session. It's important to note that Simon, like all of the other candidates who ran for District 26's seat, is opposed to the prison project.
All right. Well, we've been talking a lot about the GOP. How did Democrats fare on Tuesday night?
So no surprises that Republicans did very well on Election Day, as they typically do. But it's also worth noting that Democrats picked up a seat in the state legislature. Alex Holliday won the House District 70 special election against Republican challenger Beau Renshaw. Holliday will serve until next January, so he's filling out the remainder of former state Representative Carlton Wing's term. Holliday also won a primary race against Cordelia Smith Johnson for a full 2-year term in office, meaning he'll face Renshaw again in the November general election.
And there were also a number of local races here in Central Arkansas that were decided on Tuesday night as well. Can you tell us about some of those?
It was a bad night for incumbents. We saw retired Pulaski County Circuit Judge Wendell Griffin ending the night with 62% of the vote. He overtook incumbent County Judge Barry Hyde. Hyde was seeking a fourth term in office. Griffin will face unopposed Republican candidate Michael Rushen in November. We also saw an upset in the Pulaski County prosecutor's race. Bobby Forrest Jr. came out on top over incumbent Will Jones with just under 53% of the vote. Jones's race faced scandal after an affair with his deputy prosecutor, Kelly Ward, was brought to light. Meanwhile, over in Lone Oak County, a primary race for sheriff that garnered national attention ended with a challenger, Aaron Spencer, as the winner. He got 53% of the vote. Spencer has been charged with second-degree murder of a man he says was sexually abusing his then-14-year-old daughter. He defeated incumbent Sheriff John Staley as well as challenger David Buford. So Spencer now advances to the November general election. It wasn't all doom and gloom for incumbents, however. Pulaski County Sheriff Eric Higgins survived a challenge from James J.D. Wheeler. He had 78% of the vote. Meanwhile, Deborah Buckner ended the night the winner for Pulaski County Treasurer in the race against Adam Fogelman.
Josie, thank you so much for the comprehensive breakdown of these races. Is there anything else we missed?
So we saw a number of judicial races be decided on Tuesday night. Sitting Arkansas Supreme Court Justice Nicholas Brawny won his bid to serve another term on the high court, and he just barely edged out challenger John Adams. It ended up being a relatively close race for the two of them. In the race for circuit judge here in Pulaski County, attorney Robert Tellez came out on top. He avoided a runoff with challengers Jacob Wickliffe and Jesse Gibson. And last but not least, two new faces will appear on the Little Rock School Board, and that's Eugene Kropitsky and Salandra Jackson. Another newcomer to the board, Anthony Nichols, ran unopposed for the Zone 6 position.
All right. Well, that was Little Rock Public Radio's politics and government reporter Josie Lenora breaking down election results from Tuesday night. Thank you, Josie.
Thanks, Daniel.
The number of kids attending public schools in Arkansas is at its lowest level in at least two decades. Along with that comes challenges for district funding, staffing, and educational programs. Education leaders cite economic pressures, immigration policy, and the state's school voucher program as potential causes. KUAF's Casey Mann spoke to Northwest Arkansas superintendents and education advocates about what this shift might mean for the future of Arkansas public education.
This school year in Arkansas may look just like any other. Buses still run, bells still ring, and kids stream in and out of classrooms. However, the numbers behind Arkansas public education are shifting. According to data from the Arkansas Department of Education, public school enrollment across the state has dropped to just over 465,000 students, the lowest total in at least two decades. In 2023, enrollment was sitting above 475,000 students. That's a drop of nearly 10,000 students over three school years. So, what's driving this decline? Well, according to school district superintendents in Northwest Arkansas, the answer is complicated.
About 60% of our students are free and reduced lunch. And so that coincides with their income levels. And the median price of a house now is exponentially more than it was 4 years ago.
That was Rogers School District Superintendent Jeff Perry. In Perry's district, enrollment has dropped by almost 600 students since 2023. He says one contributing factor is the availability of affordable housing for families.
The housing market has squeezed some of our families out to other areas of the state where the housing market may not be as expensive.
Rogers School District is also home to a large number of Hispanic students, and Perry says that, because of this, recent immigration restrictions across the state have contributed to stifled enrollment.
We have about 52% or so of our student body who was Hispanic, and so with that was an area that was growing, and now it's a situation to where that number of students that we had coming in to replace some students that were leaving for whatever reason, that number has decreased.
While Rogers adjusts to enrollment decline, about 20 minutes down the road, classrooms in Bentonville are filling up. The district added roughly 370 students in the past year, and Superintendent Debbie Jones says the area's economic growth plays a big part in that, but she's still concerned about wider enrollment trends across Northwest Arkansas. And she says she thinks the state's voucher program is part of the reason public schools are seeing a sharp enrollment decline.
I always worry. I think that's a part of the job, but I don't think that we have to guess will it have a financial impact. We've seen in a couple of short years of the program that it does have a financial impact on school districts.
Arkansas launched the Education Freedom Account program through the LEARNS Act in 2023. It allows families to receive about 90% of what a public school would get per student to pay for private schooling or homeschooling. The voucher program was phased in over 3 years, and the 2025-2026 school year marks the first time that participation was limited by available funding rather than by set limits on student approvals. When the program launched in 2023, state officials limited participation to about 6,000 students, or 1.5% of the previous year's public school enrollment, before expanding it to 3% the following year. Jones says that, along with schools losing funding, one of her biggest worries with the voucher program has to do with the quality of education students might receive after leaving the public school system.
I want to be clear when I'm saying not all homeschool instructors are bad. There are high-quality private schools out there. I personally believe families should have choice. But I also believe there have to be accountability measures in place, because I know that there are cases where families may feel that their child's getting a good education in a private setting or in a homeschool setting, only to find out 2 years down the road, when they should be going into third grade, they can't read. They then will return to public school, and then we're charged with getting those kids on grade level. And it's much, much more difficult when you've lost that time.
Only about 19% of voucher recipients since 2023 used the program to switch from public to private or homeschooling. But it adds to the pressure school districts are already feeling. Have you talked to any other superintendents, maybe from neighboring districts, about the effect that losing students is having on them?
Oh, absolutely. I talked to them today. And one said that he is laying off 42 or 45 teachers through attrition, not rehiring next year. Others they're having significant impact, well, especially where they are losing a significant number of students.
Arkansas school districts receive roughly $8,000 per student in state funding. So when enrollment drops, so does revenue. According to the nonprofit Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, state law provides districts with declining enrollment a partial funding buffer. Districts can receive a fraction of the per pupil funding they lost, but only for up to 2 years. April Reisma is a special education teacher and the president of the Arkansas Education Association, an organization made up of teachers, education support professionals, students, and public education advocates. She says the state's voucher program exacerbates an already existing problem of inadequate public school funding. Reisma says that even if only 19% of students who use the vouchers come from public schools, it still significantly impacts some districts.
You need to think about rural schools as well, you know, with declining numbers, when even just a small decline might push them over the edge into being in some sort of fiscal distress and being on the verge of closing or having to consolidate with another school.
Perry says financial solutions like staff cuts are often complicated.
A lot of folks would think where if you lost 100 students, then you could reduce two or three teachers and it would kind of even out. But the problem is those students don't all go to the same school. They're not all in the same grade. And so you can't always just reduce a teacher because you've lost students across the entire district.
In Rogers, rising property values have helped to soften the blow. Higher assessments have brought in supplemental local revenue, but Perry says that without that cushion, the enrollment losses could have been financially devastating. Reisma says that while she does not doubt that the voucher program has helped some families in need of assistance, it largely functions as a discount for those who could already afford to send their children to private school.
First year, it was 95% of the folks that took the vouchers were already attending private school. So they were not people that needed a hand up. They were people that just got a coupon. It was a coupon for the wealthy, let's be honest. And it continues to be so, even though that number has gone down slightly.
She said that when these affluent students leave public school districts, it negatively affects schools overall.
When those students that are more from affluent families leaving the school district, there's a direct correlation with a person in a low socioeconomic situation and having lower test scores, you know, and that's going to affect the school overall for sure.
As students leave, teacher workloads change too.
It sounds like the opposite, right? If you have less students, you're going to have smaller class sizes. That's not true. You're going to have less teachers. And so they're going to put students together and make larger class sizes, which in turn makes it very difficult for a teacher to be able to teach efficiently and to the best of their ability, right?
For some Arkansas schools, fewer students means compromising on staff and student experiences. And as families weigh their options, districts are left balancing budgets and trying to maintain high standards of education.
As you lose money, you have to cut something. And fortunately, we're not in that situation, but many times those may be programs. Schools offer far more than what is required, but there's a reason we offer all of these orchestra and band and all the athletics and all the different career pathways.
According to the most recent Arkansas EFA annual report, the state estimated that the program would cost about $277 million for the 2025-2026 school year. However, in January, lawmakers approved another $32 million for the program, bringing the state's total cost to about $309 million.
That was KUAF's Casey Mann reporting. An effort is underway to designate several counties in the Arkansas Delta as a federal National Heritage Area. A series of public meetings will be held next week in Jonesboro, Pine Bluff, and Helena, West Helena to solicit public comment on the proposal. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with Penny Toombs, Assistant Director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites, who is part of the team working on the project.
Okay, so first of all, explain to me and to our listeners, what is a National Heritage Area?
Sure. Well, a National Heritage Area is a federally designated region that has a deep history and a strong sense of place. So unlike a traditional like national park, National Heritage Areas are living landscapes. It's where people and land have had an impact on each other for years back. So it's a really special designation that you can get for an area.
And this designation comes from the federal government?
That is correct, yes. And we currently do not have a National Heritage Area in Arkansas.
Well, can you give us an example of a National Heritage Area that's already been established?
Sure. Mississippi Delta National Heritage Area, the Tennessee Civil War National Heritage Area. So there are some in the state surrounding us, but none in Arkansas.
Okay. So I'm assuming this is just a geographical area that has something in common with the heritage shared by that area?
Sure. It has a story to tell that connects it all. You know, it might be agriculture, it might be music. It's just some common theme that you have throughout the region that really designates that as a special area. There are 62 in the United States right now, but again, none in Arkansas.
So this is being proposed for this part of Arkansas. Why is a feasibility study part of the process to get the National Heritage Area designation?
Sure. This is the first step in the process. So Dr. Adam Long, our executive director of the Heritage Sites, he wrote a grant and it was received for the Heritage Sites to do a feasibility study through the Delta Regional Authority. So for over a year now, we have been working with Point Heritage Development, and they are doing the feasibility study. So they will come in certain times during the year, and we will take them around this area that we're looking at, which is the 15 counties that encompass Arkansas Delta Byways, along with Lincoln and Jefferson counties. This will be their third visit. And during these visits, we go to the different areas and have public meetings. So they explain what a National Heritage Area is, what it can do for the areas. And then they listen and ask questions like, tell us about your history. Tell us about your heritage. What special stories do you have here that are unique to your area? And so they gather all of that information and then they put it together and you see where kind of the area that you're headed, whether it might be in music or something related to history and the New Deal or whatever that might be, agriculture that really ties in that area.
So in a way, through these community meetings that are happening the week of March 9th, you're trying to learn what exactly all these counties do have in common that could be then receive that National Heritage Area designation.
Absolutely.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I mean, you've worked in the Delta for quite some time through your work with the A-State Heritage Sites. What do you see are some of the possibilities, some of the things and ways in which these counties could be linked to get this designation?
Sure. Well, the ones that I just mentioned, absolutely. We have such a strong music heritage. You know that as well as anyone through the area, but also our agriculture, our stories about, you know, in the history, the land, even the New Deal program from just using the heritage sites. You look at from Piggott, you know, and that how that ties in to that New Deal, to Great Depression era, all the way down to Lakeport Plantation. And again, that's just an example from our heritage sites. But then you have, you know, Sultana, you have the National Cold War Museum. And it's not just museums. It encompasses, you know, the entire community. But those are just examples that I'm most familiar with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what it does, it really helps to preserve natural resources, historical sites. It promotes recreational activities and really boosts that heritage tourism, because once you're designated, then you're on the map for people to see, and people want to come and find out what that story is.
That was Penny Toombs, Assistant Director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.